The new film Mary, Queen of Scots begins at the end with Mary Stuart heading to the executioner's block in 1587 at the age of 44. But we then learn how she got there. The young Queen Mary, a Catholic raised in France for her safety because of religious turmoil in Scotland, returns home to rule her country at the age of 18. But Protestants are now in control of Scotland, and of course, they reign in England, where Mary has a claim to that throne as well, but it's occupied by Queen Elizabeth, played by Margot Robbie. Mary, played by Saoirse Ronan, is hoping the older Elizabeth doesn't have an heir and clears a path for her.
I shall respect Elizabeth's crown as soon as she names me its successor.
Madam, my queen,
if she has any concerns about this proposal, she may express them to me directly.
Well, the two queens both face misogyny, but instead of forming a sisterhood, they get inside each other's heads and, well, Mary loses hers. Mary, Queen of Scots is director Josie Rourke's first film. She's also the artistic director of London's Dunmar Warehouse Theatre Company. She joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Welcome.
Hi.
Also joining us, screenwriter Bo Willimon, who also was the creator of the Netflix show House of Cards. So he is familiar with the metaphorical sharp weapons and backstabbing. Bo, welcome to you as well.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
And I do want to start with you, Bo, because we know that this film was based on the book Queen of Scots, The True Life of Mary Stuart by Dr. John Guy, who was said to find research that others hadn't seen before. Just tell us, what didn't we know? What does Dr. John Guy tell us?
John Guy's book really challenged a lot of the stereotypes we have had about Mary and Elizabeth over the years. Oftentimes, Mary is portrayed as impulsive and reckless, over-emotional, naive, and Elizabeth is portrayed as being cold, calculated, and shrewd. And really, both of those are wrong. Mary was really quite deliberate and politically savvy with the choices that she was making, and Elizabeth at that time was quite indecisive and insecure. And in many ways, Mary's challenge to her own legitimacy burnished Elizabeth into becoming the Elizabeth that we've all come to know. Mm. So we really wanted to tell a story that made us rethink these two women and really allow them to tell their own stories rather than let the historiography of a lot of people that have had it out for Mary over the centuries do the storytelling for us.
And Josie, here you are, a female director. We have these two female leads.
That's a lot of women, isn't
well,
it?
Well, yeah. And I want more, because,
yeah,
the depth of it and the fact that it could just devolve into a catfight, and it doesn't. What was important for you to bring out in these two women?
I think that Beau really hit the nail on the head there, that what we're trying to do is avoid the stereotype of them. And I think the stereotype is one was cold and calculating, one was emotional and incompetent. And I just don't think that's borne out by the detailed reality that John Guy went into so forensically, nor do I think it actually reflects women's lives in, let's call it a workplace. I mean, obviously they were crowned heads of Europe, but I think we're now in a position where what we need to start to do is tell better and more honest stories about the realities of leadership for women. Mm. And this canvas gave us an opportunity to do that.
Well, and also, we forget that these two women were so extraordinary in their time. They are surrounded by men who just as soon kill them, and they have a fascination with each other.
Yeah, and that fascination is because they are literally on the same island. They're both doing the same job, and nobody else is doing that job. Only they can know what it is like to be the other. And this is a bit of a strange analogy, but if you think of, the kind of Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty axis, where you go, yeah, okay, you've got the sort of villain and hero in both of them, but actually what runs through those books and all the really great screen adaptations of that story are two people who have the intelligence and the sympathy and the understanding that really drives them to simply want to be in the same space, mm, and want to look each other in the eye. And there's great drama in the root of that. Yeah. Beau, of course, realised that in this extraordinary, imagined, climactic scene of the film in which those two queens do look at each other face to face.
And Beau, tell us about that, because as we said, much of the film is based on the research of Dr. John Guy and his book, again, Queen of Scots. But that scene is imagined?
That's right. We decided to take a liberty, and that was to have these two women meet. And we did it for a few reasons. I mean, oftentimes historical fact as portrayed literally can actually fall short in giving the audience access to the true complexity and dynamic between two characters. And running through the core of the story for us was the notion, which history supports, that ultimately these two women, their instincts were to find ways to coexist with one another amicably. And yet the political tectonic plates of the time really prevented them from being able to. And the only way for us to fully dramatize the emotional complexity of that was to put them face to face rather than simply rely on epistolary storytelling through correspondence.
But do you ever have any hesitation about that? I mean, this is film. And this is entertainment primarily, but so much of it is historic. And for many, it's going to be a first telling to have a scene that, you know, that didn't exist.
Yeah, well, I could ask the same question of Shakespeare, really, right? I mean, you look at all of, you know, his history plays where he took much wilder liberties than we have with this film. And the reason he's doing it is because there's an emotional or essential truth that he's trying to get to in revealing something to you about the character. And there's also a narrative expectation from the audience that we've followed these two women over the course of this film, and it would be a shame not to have these two great characters played by these two extraordinary actors share the same screen at the same time. You would be subverting a narrative expectation that has quite a pull to it.
Yeah. I think it's also important to add that that scene of those two queens meeting, this is not to say that Beau hasn't done the definitive version of it, but, you know, Katharine Hepburn's played that scene. Mm-hmm. Helen Mirren has played that scene. Vanessa Redgrave and Eileen Atkins have played that scene. It's not totally an innovation, I'm afraid.
No. Let's just talk a little bit about what people might need to know before they go into the film. The bare bones plot, which is Mary Scott's claim to the throne of England. She was the senior descendant of King Henry VIII of England's older sister. And so that's sort of the basis of her claim. And also it has to do with who's going to be able to produce an heir first, Elizabeth or Mary? But it would seem as if Elizabeth, you know, seems to agree a little bit with Mary's claim. And here's a scene with Queen Elizabeth, again played by Margot Robbie, speaking to her Privy Council, who have constantly plotted to deprive Mary of the throne. After all, she's a Catholic. This is England. And they expressed horror at the possibility of a Catholic becoming the Queen of England. Let's listen.
Despite your every effort, she has prevailed. She has proven herself, in fact, far more capable than my own Privy Council. Should I die before my time, we could do worse than to place her on the throne of England.
Beau, is that an accurate historical sentiment?
Yes, the Privy Council in England desperately wanted to do anything they could to dethrone or delegitimize Mary. But what you see time and time again is Elizabeth beginning to question their advice and actually consider the possibility of Mary becoming her heir. And that's actually what Mary was angling for. If Mary could get Elizabeth to agree that she would be the heir, assuming that Elizabeth didn't have any children, then they would have been able to coexist peaceably. And they came very close to making that deal.
Josie, this film is coming. I mean, you might as well just sit back and watch throngs go towards it, because it's coming at a time when it's clear. We're hungry for these stories. You have The Favorite, you have The Crown, you have Victoria. So much fascination with these women. What do you think that is?
I think that to an extent has always been the case. Beau referenced Shakespeare before, and great writers have always enjoyed writing about great and troubled leaders. I also think that what we're beginning to see, and I've got great hope and joy for this really, is a powerful sense, which seemed to slip away from us for a while, that a woman or women can sit as the leads in a movie. And what's certainly true, having spent most of my career in the theatre, is that, you know, you are looking quite hard to find the same volume in the canon of leading parts for women as you are for men. So really, this reminting of these big classic roles and thinking and rethinking about women in power and leadership and what that means, and actually the honesty with which their stories are being told, I think is a really positive cultural moment, and comes from partly a commercial desire, because actually women are going to sell tickets and people are going to want to go and see that, but also just a quiet passion to have those stories better told with more humanity.
Do you feel some personal satisfaction that Mary's story has been retold. I mean, in the end, she gives birth to James. After Elizabeth dies, James rules a united Britain.
In some ways, his two parents aren't necessarily Mary and Darnley, but his two parents really are Mary and Elizabeth. It was, in a way, them achieving some form of union because Elizabeth helped raise James. James was in many ways closer to Elizabeth than to his own imprisoned mother, and he did unify both those kingdoms. So Mary, in her own fashion, did win at the end of the day, but I think Elizabeth did too because she also found a way to maintain her power and ultimately create a space for James. So they both navigated it in their own fashion and, you know, unfortunately for Mary, with great cost.
I should actually probably say just before, given that I live in England, my doormat fills up with letters from Scottish nationalists, that he unified the two kingdoms in holding titles over both, but he did govern them separately. Mm. So it wasn't the union that we now have.
Well, and this, I'm sure this is resonating in a completely unique way to England and Scotland.
You can say Brexit. Yeah. Yeah.
Just a beautiful, powerful film. We've been speaking with screenwriter Bo Willimon and the director Josie Wirk. It is Mary, Queen of Scots. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.